You probably heard elsewhere in the news about people returning to Paradise, California this week to see what's left of their homes. We're getting used to the idea of megafires that can take out most of entire towns, and we're getting used to exploring the wide-ranging results of fires and the smoke they produce, in some cases a long way from actual flames. We'll focus on green growing things in this segment, and we'll take it beyond wine grapes. The issue of smoke taint comes up fairly often for vineyards in smoky areas, but there are obviously other things we consume that grow where smoke settles. Researchers in California looked into the effects of smoke on produce through a citizen science project. Vanessa Raddatz led it with the Produce Safety After Urban Wildfire Citizen Science Initiative. She's our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. Hi, Vanessa.
Hi. Nice to speak with you, Jeffrey.
It's good to have you here. We also have with us Julia Van Solen Kim, who is the North Bay Food Systems Advisor for the Napa County UCCE, which is the University of California Cooperative Extension. Julia, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having us.
So, Vanessa, you looked at a specific set of fires. Tell us about how the whole process got started here.
Great. Well, as you just mentioned, we know that people are just now getting back to their homes in Paradise, but we are actually going back in time now to the fall of 2017 and the fires that broke out across Northern California last year. And I was up in the North Bay in Sonoma County during the recovery period, and I was working to help move produce from all of the local farms that were really generously donating their produce to the recovery efforts, bringing it to evacuation shelters, to kitchens. And it was a question on the back of a lot of people's minds. Is the produce that we're bringing to people that's been exposed to all of this smoke and ash, is it actually okay for us to be eating with all of the chemicals that we know are in the smoke? So while the fires were still ongoing, I met up with Julia, who's on this call as well, and Mimi Enright, who runs the Master Gardener Program with UC Cooperative Extension. And together we trained community members through the Master Gardener Network to collect produce samples so that we could take a look and we could actually start to answer this question that has very little scientific basis right now.
So, Julia, how much body of evidence or is there much to go back to refer to about effects of smoke? And this is, again, not just wildfire smoke from forests, but you're also talking about urban areas burning with all the things that that have in people's homes that are going up in flames, too.
Yeah, so there's a great distinction there. There is some limited research around the impacts of wildfire smoke on food in our food system, and that's from other countries and in more traditional, more typical wildfire events. In terms of an urban wildfire like we experienced in October 2017 in the North San Francisco North Bay, all of our UC University of California food safety experts had very little expertise and very little knowledge to share on the topic. We were worried about all different kinds of things that come from homes and industry burning, and it was really an unknown question and an under-researched area for our university and for the field of food safety as a whole.
So in short, we're not used to having this many homes and businesses go up at the same time, it sounds like.
Exactly, and also in proximity to areas where food is being produced.
And so what were some of the major concerns, the things that you decided to look for, the things that were most likely to be in smoke that might have been issues for produce?
Yeah, so I'll let Vanessa answer that. And I would say basically that was our first question for many of the scientists. And the food safety scientists within the university were really, really interested from a science perspective. But we didn't even know enough to know where to begin to look.
Wow.
And so part of this study's unfolding finding is to better understand what we should be looking at in the first place.
Okay, so Vanessa, how did you decide to narrow it down to essentially three major fields?
Right. Well, we had a long list at one point, and we narrowed it down partially, as is realistic with many of these kinds of projects, by budget. And I think this is part of why it's really important to have something like a citizen science project that's backed by an organization like UC Cooperative Extension. Is if you were just a home gardener and you were interested in something like dioxins and furans, that's $395 a pop. You know, so we were able to use university resources to really address these on-the-ground community questions. And so we took our long list and we narrowed it down to heavy metals, dioxins and furans, PAHs, and PCBs.
PAHs and, being polycyclic aromatic hydrocarbons?
That's right. So PAHs, polycyclic aromatic hydrocarbons, they come from when anything burns. So that could be a wildfire or it could be a car. It just comes from combustion. We, and all except for the PAHs, all of those are very persistent in the environment. They don't break down quickly. They stick around. And then the other reason we chose these is two of them, dioxins and PCBs, are particularly worrisome because they can bioaccumulate up the food chain. So when they are persistent, they stick around and they stay in your body for long periods of time, accumulating in the fat.
PCBs, the polychlorinated biphenyls, is that?
That's correct. Oh,
okay. I've been working on my chemistry memory here. We're talking to Vanessa Raddatz and Julia Van Solen Kim about the effects of smoke, urban wildfire smoke, and how it affects produce growing nearby. This is from the North Bay fires of the fall of 2017. This produced the Produce Safety After Urban Wildfire Citizen Science Initiative, which Vanessa led and Julia assisted at the University of California Cooperative Extension from the Napa County UCCE. You can join the conversation on the exchange. Lots of questions you may have. 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. The fact that we are talking urban wildfire is really what makes the central point here, Vanessa, it would seem, because when you think about the things that burn up in houses, I mean, everything from the structure of the house itself and the products used to make it to potentially lead paint on older houses, all your electronics burning up and everything from stuff in your kitchen to gasoline and paint and stuff you store in your garage, all this stuff goes up in smoke in a fire like this.
That's correct. Right. And that's what makes these such rare events and also really interesting moments to study from a scientific perspective as well as from the community perspective.
So once you had the list narrowed, I mean, you mentioned the citizen scientists and getting them all trained through the Master Gardener program. How many people did you have altogether, Vanessa?
We had over 15 volunteers who were taking samples from community gardens and their backyard gardens. And we also had a number of farms that participated in this. And so this was all during the fire while they were still blazing. We were able to collect produce samples in the moment. And that's the real strength of citizen science.
Right. So this is pretty great that you managed to mobilize them that fast. So how long was the training and then how long the observation period?
The training was a weekend long. And, well, there were multiple trainings over the course of a weekend that people could attend. And it took about an hour or so per site afterwards. So volunteers that went out into the community, there was one volunteer who sampled from five different gardens over the next week and a half. And so it's a university advised rigorous sampling protocol that we were still able to teach the community members, and they could go out on their own and get some very, very strong data for us.
And so, Julia, what did you do with the data once it was all collected?
Yeah, so just building off of what Vanessa was explaining, with the legwork of our University of California Master Gardeners and citizen science volunteers, we were able to collect over 200 samples of leafy greens. And so you can see how in the context of a wildfire event, and in a university context, it would be really hard to get 200 samples collected from the field exposed to smoke and ash. into a lab that quickly if we were just relying on university resources. So the citizen science component was really crucial to be able to gather that breadth of data. And we collected over 200 samples of leafy greens, both washed and unwashed leafy greens, and stored them in a freezer, and then hoped for funding. And that's another wonderful story of this study, is that the community really mobilized around getting us our initial seed funding to launch this project. The university also contributed, and our region's air quality management district also contributed to the study. And so with that funding, we were able to get high-priority samples into the lab to look for the different chemicals that Vanessa explained.
Why leafy greens, Julia, and not other things like, I don't know, tomatoes or something?
Yeah, so it was the fall, and we were looking for something that would be grown across local farms and local school, community, and residential gardens that would be in abundance, and leafy greens are in abundance at this time of year. And then we also wanted something that would have a lot of surface area to be exposed to the air and the smoke and the ash. And so those are the primary reasons why we chose leafy greens. We also know, importantly, that leafy greens are really essential for health. And our guiding question was, we know eating leafy greens is really, really healthy. And how does that knowledge impacted when there's a wildfire event like this? Does that common sense logic to eat leafy greens change in this context? And what our study's findings have found is it really doesn't. We found very low levels of risk, which Vanessa can explain in more detail. But overall, we really think that it's super important to continue having access to fresh, healthy, locally grown, homegrown, backyard garden grown produce, and that leafy greens are a really important way to stay healthy.
And we're talking leafy greens in this case, exposed to the smoke of urban wildfire. This is the North Bay fires of October 2017, as studied in the Produce Safety After Urban Wildfire Citizen Science Initiative, led by Vanessa Raddatz, one of our guests, Julia Van Solen-Kim. You just heard North Bay Food Systems Advisor for the Napa County UC Cooperative Extension. You can join us at 800-838-3760 with questions and comments. Send emails to jx@jeffnet.org. So we just broached the subject of results, and we talked about four basic areas, Vanessa. Polycyclic aromatic hydrocarbons, PAHs, inconclusive, it sounds like.
Mm-hmm. That's correct, and that's true for both PAHs and PCBs. And what that comes down to is, again, how new this kind of research is. So the lab that we've been working with, it's an incredible lab, very well rated. But the standard tests that they do, these are all standard EPA tests to look for, and that's the Environmental Protection Agency, all these three-letter acronyms, right?
Right.
So these are EPA tests that they often do on water or soil, and then we're giving them these bags of kale. And so what that has meant is that these tests that they use often are not able to give us a fine enough resolution on the chemicals that might be present for us to really confirm or deny whether or not these chemicals are present at levels that would exceed Proposition 65's no significant risk levels. So I got to back up and explain why we're using that. One of the big things that is really important to us as we now sort through our results and figure out how to explain it to the community is to also be really clear that just having a chemical on a plant does not necessarily mean it's going to lead to a poor health outcome. That depends on a lot of things, and one of the big ones is dose. So it's how much is present on it.
Mm-hmm. And one of the standards that we can look towards is Proposition 65, which was pushed by concerned community members to give us, as consumers, a better sense of carcinogens and other chemicals that create impacts on the brain or on developing fetuses, so we can know when those are in our consumer products. So we decided to go with that threshold because that also helped us address some of the concerns coming from local farmers who wanted to know whether or not it was still okay to be giving this to their consumers.
Okay.
And so Prop 65 is the state standard, and so we went with that. And so basically, coming back to the PAHs and PCBs question, what we have here is an ambiguity because our detection limits are higher than the state standard. So there's this little gap that's above the state standard and below our detection limit, where we have no idea if they might be there, in which case they would be above the state standard. But on the other hand, what we can say is that they are non-detected. At this point, we are not detecting them at all. And that's a really good sign.
Okay, heavy metals.
It also means that this is for the PAHs and PCBs.
Sure.
This means that we're not seeing them at levels that would cause immediate or acute concern. We're not seeing them at very high dangerous levels.
All right, and then at heavy metals.
Yeah.
I want to move on to the next one because we're running short
sure,
on time
yeah.
here. Heavy metals were of low concern except for nickel. Two of the eight samples apparently exceeded the Prop 65 levels. But that can be mitigated by just a simple act of washing the produce. Is that right?
That's correct. And so, and those results, the two out of the eight samples, that was from our preliminary report. So I also want to share with everyone that our final report is still ongoing. We sent more samples to the lab. And of those, even fewer came back with nickel. There's still one that had nickel, but all of that is from our next level analysis. All of that's going to be published in early 2019.
And the dioxins
and heavy metals, it seems like that is easily remediated from washing.
And then finally, the dioxins and furans indicated that there were some levels above background levels, but still below the no significant risk level, the Prop 65 level.
That's correct, and we're looking into that further with this next set of samples that we sent in as well.
Just a quick question to close up, Vanessa. It sounds like you guys got out there so far in advance that you, like as Julia said, you got ahead of the funding. So, but you guys were committed to doing this, from the sounds of it.
That's right, and I think that also brings us back to. I want to circle around to what Julia was saying, which is, even though we are finding some contamination in the produce and soil. And it is very interesting from a scientific perspective on the impacts of smoke on produce. For the community perspective, it's really much more important to remind people that supporting the local food economy and access to green leafy vegetables is actually also very important to health.
Okay,
so
gotta go.
So we're doing this kind of risk assessment. It needs to be balanced.
Vanessa Raddatz, Produce Safety After Urban Wildfire Citizen Scientist Initiatives. Julie Van Solen-Kim, thank you very much.
Thank you.